This is Outline After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 399 for November 9th of 2017. Ford took the all-new Expedition to the max. Want to welcome everybody to yet another edition of Outline After Hours, but Gary Vasilash, where the heck are we?
Yeah, we're in Malibu, California, the Santa Monica Mountains, because we're driving a vehicle that has something to do with mountainous terrain.
Well, that's what the show is all about, is the new Ford Expedition, new from the ground up. But where the heck are we?
I have no idea. It's somewhere in California.
Okay, well, let's get out of this segment, and we're going to start the show in just a minute. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Craig Patterson is the utility marketing manager for Ford, and it's his job to sell this brand new Expedition, right. And you got to be pretty excited about what you got to sell here.
Makes my job pretty easy, right? We built a better mousetrap. The engineering team built a great vehicle, and I can't wait to sell it.
So why is it a better mousetrap?
It's the smartest, most capable, most adaptable Expedition ever. But it also raises the standard in the segment to an all new level. Whether it's powertrain capability, 375 horsepower EcoBoost, 400 horsepower available EcoBoost on our Platinum, best in class towing, best in class fuel economy, aluminum body, great interior and exterior, all the great new features. It really is a winner.
Mm-hmm. Craig, you guys have sort of ceded that segment to Chevrolet. I mean, the Suburban has dominated that segment for years. How are you going to let people know that there's a brand new Expedition available, and how are you going to pry some of those Suburban buyers out of their Suburbans?
Well, the first step is to be able to stop our own customers from leaving our showrooms, right? So we have customers right now that are leaving and going to GM because we have not had a competitive product. We have a great product now, so those customers will automatically, right? Those will be the easy ones. The tough ones are going to be the GM customers. But once they get in, and this is what our research tells us, is once they get in and do a full evaluation, they're very willing to switch.
But everyone always says that. Boy, if I could only get anybody to take a test drive,
right.
I got the sale
right.
made.
Right.
The key is getting people into the showroom and say, I want to go for a ride.
Right. It doesn't even require a test drive. And that was what our research even showed us. It's once they got in and saw the package, saw the interior design, so they're intrigued by the exterior, right? Because the exterior is now great, right? It looks good. But once they get inside, they really see the difference. And it's not only the interior design, but it's the interior package. Great second row, sliding second row, tip slide second row to get into the third row. Third row is actually a usable third row as opposed to some of our competitors. So fantastic product.
Now, you guys, this is the third generation of the vehicle, correct?
Yeah, depending on how you count generations. But yes, we were all new in 97, then we had a major in 2002, and then another one in 2007.
Mm-hmm. And so last year, I mean, actually you guys didn't do too badly compared to 2015. You were up 44% mm-hmm. overall. So, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously people are interested in this
segment is
generation.
Right. Yeah, the segment's starting to rebound a little bit. Mm-hmm. Nothing close to the 90s, right? So mm-hmm. when we were in that time frame. But you're starting to see a little bit of growth, and it's part of the whole SUV growth that you're seeing coming into the industry, and large utilities are no different.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that somebody who buys a vehicle like this, more conservative, older, do you go into the whole digital marketing thing with this, or do you take a different approach in how you go to get the word out about it?
Well, what's important about this customer is what we found is they're twice as likely to research online as the average new car buyer. So while they might not be on social media trying to get their research, they are doing all the online research, and that's how we intend to win. Because once they do the comparisons online, if they do the research, they'll choose Expedition.
That's an interesting point. Why did they do so much more research than somebody buying a car?
Maybe it is because they're more conservative. Maybe it's because of the price of the purchase. It's important for the whole family, right? So it's a big, important family purchase. So they want to make sure they're making the right choice.
And you raise a good point. Let's talk about the pricing of the vehicle. Where does it start? What's the base price? price and what can you take it up to?
Right. It starts at 52.8, and then it goes up to around 74, 75,000 at the platinum level. So so it's right competitive with all the other vehicles within its segment.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, John mentioned some of the buyers perhaps being older, but are you guys not finding that there's millennials that are beginning to be interested in big vehicles like this because they're beginning to have families and can fill that thing up?
That's exactly what you're starting to see. So that's why when I mentioned a little bit of the growth that you're starting to see, it's typically a Gen X vehicle right now because that's for the family stage. But those older millennials, those ones that are now 35 years old, starting to have families, they delayed that till now, but now it's happening. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see that already with Explorer and from Explorer now to Expedition.
And Craig, where are you going to sell this vehicle? I mean, traditionally, Midwest, Texas especially, has been the big thing for big SUVs like this. Is that the same pattern?
You have to win in Texas. For us to be successful, Dallas, Houston, we have to be successful there. That's a big part of our market. Our central market area, the central part of the U.S., including Texas, is about 40% of our sales right now. But in order for us to be really successful, we're going to need to be successful in areas where we haven't been in the past. And so that includes places like Los Angeles, places like Atlanta, Florida, and even New York.
So do you position the vehicle differently for the different markets?
There are some regional differences. For example, in the West, in the wide open areas of the West, you sell more of the extended length, the Expedition Max, and so you see a little bit more of that. There's maybe a little bit of more of a luxury bias in Southern California, but otherwise they're really similar.
Mm-hmm. You've got two different wheelbases to sell. Mm-hmm. How do you position them differently in the market?
Mm-hmm. So we have our Expedition and then our extended length version, which is now Expedition Max. So the Expedition Max is for those customers that they might have a bigger family, they've got more cargo needs, they want to have the vehicle that be able to carry a large family and all of their luggage, or they've got big cargo needs. For example, we could put 26 sheets of plywood in it with the liftgate closed. So I mean, it's a great vehicle for that.
And I got to ask, how did you settle on the name Max for the long wheelbase one?
Well, we thought it best represented what it was. And what we found is when we had the EL version, the extended length version, is that not enough customers were aware of it. We thought Expedition Max, it's the maximum Expedition. So there, it makes a lot of sense.
Did you guys really clinic that name? I mean, did you go through a bunch of different names? You just came up with it?
We did not. Yeah, we came up. It was a name that we had in use in other markets in our Canadian market, so it was one that we were used to, and so we said, well, maybe we could go to that, and we reviewed it internally, and we thought it made sense.
How important is the third row in this vehicle?
It's quite important, depending on the customer. But the customers that are often in this segment because they have the need to be able to carry seven or eight passengers at a time. Mm-hmm. So we thought it was really important to be able to. With our independent rear suspension, be able to actually give a person a usable third row. Some of our competitors don't. You have a choice with them as to, okay, I want the vehicle, but it's only for the driver. It's not for the third row passengers mm-hmm. or for very short trips. So for those customers that have the need to have multiple children or multiple guests, and this is really a vehicle where you're hosting, right? So mm-hmm. I might be hosting people, I don't want to have to make excuses for, I'm sorry, I got to get in the third row.
Right, right. So John, you know, mentioning taking guests and people, John and I were fooling around in the back hatch, and you have all kinds of amenities there in terms of tables and whatnot. Could you talk to us about what you've done there?
Sure. We had the engineers came up with a pretty ingenious little cargo management system with shelves to be able to organize the cargo back there. We retain the flip glass to be able to open up the back, be able to set stuff on there, be able to pull stuff off the shelf as well. But it allows you to categorize your things, put things in, and keep them all safe and organized.
You know, there's been a problem in this industry for years, you know, that they always refer to as launch and forget. Mm-hmm. So a vehicle comes out like this, all kinds of marketing and advertising all about it, and then boom, done, and it's got to live on its own for 4 years mm-hmm. or more, even in some cases. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do to keep this fresh in the minds of people even a couple of years from now?
Well, There is the certainly an issue with sustainment. And one of the things we talked about as we were going through our launch strategy is, should we broaden out the length of our launch to be able to do that, not to get away from that launch and abandon? Because we've seen that with other manufacturers where they've done that. They've had a brief spike, and then the vehicle tails off to where it was before. So we've extended our plans for how we're going to do our launch. Then after that, we've got a series of things that we plan to do, buzz actions, right, to kind of keep the vehicle fresh, maybe different types of features, sort of like we've done with Mustang, where you do a bullet or something like that. So we've got some of those things in the works. We don't have a bullet version of Expedition coming.
You guys are really going
that one. But the idea is the same, right, where you keep the vehicle fresh by having versions of the vehicle until the all-new one comes out.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we mentioned that, you know, it's basically you guys versus Chevy, and that's what it really comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were in the pickup truck space, I mean, you need like a crowbar and a laser beam, mm-hmm. and everything else to try to get somebody to move. Is it mm-hmm. the same way in this segment, or are people more flexible?
That's the beauty, and that's what I was saying in our research, why we were so gratified by it, is once we gave the customers, and you have to be able to give them an evaluation, so that is a trick, right? You need to be able to get them into the vehicle, so that's a big part of our marketing plan. Once we did that, half of the Chevy customers were willing to switch to Expedition after having a full evaluation. You wouldn't find that in full-size pickups, right?
How?
Once you told them the brand, they were not moving.
Yeah,
right?
But how did you get them to come do the evaluation?
Right. Well,
you had to bribe them.
Yeah. Well, this was market research. They didn't know what the market research was. This is a market research event. So mm-hmm. we have them come in. 71% of the customers in the clinic were GM owners. And they come in, they look at all the vehicles, they recognize theirs, they're like, yeah, I'll take that one. And then we said, okay, well, sit in all four of them. Here's the prices. Here's the specs. Here's the fuel economy, everything. Now, which one would be your first choice? Expedition. Half of the GM customers. Half stayed where they were. Half chose Expedition.
Okay, so that's for a clinic. How do you go out in the real world and replicate that?
So we've got a couple ways. One is to be able to get out into do these consumer events, whether it's consumer drive events or have the vehicles where those customers are. But another way we've been innovative is to do virtual reality. So we've got a virtual reality setup where customers can virtually experience what the vehicle is, sit in the different rows, get a sense of how it feels, get a sense of the design. And people are interested in doing that because that seems to be all the rage right now.
Sure, but where do you do that? At a mall? Or?
Right, yeah. So we have some different areas we're going to be setting up in malls and other places where they'll be able to do that.
So will you take the vehicle, say, to football games for tailgating? I mean, Ford Field might be a place you might want to.
Right.
Just comes to mind.
Yes. We have one within Ford Field now. Just for that reason, for the folks coming in. So yeah, we have an opportunity to do it there, and of course,
the lines are doing well this year.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll find out tonight.
But. Okay, so you go to these malls and Ford Field or whatever. How do you know you're getting GM, Suburban, or Tahoe owners into your vehicle?
You need to find where they're at, right? So you understand where they shop, right? So one place you might go would be to a lacrosse tournament, right? And if you go to, my son plays in travel soccer. If I go to travel soccer, it's Tahoes and Yukons and Suburbans as far as you can see, right? It's a target-rich environment. So you bring the customer, you bring it to that. These are super busy families, right? So they're not going to come to an event. You need to bring the vehicle to them.
Very interesting.
All right, so the message that you bring to the market for this new vehicle is what, simply?
Is that this raises the standard in the segment. This is the best vehicle in the segment. Check it out.
Takes SUVs to the max.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but you might not get the max version, though, right?
Right.
So, I mean, speaking of which, I mean, do you have a sense of who's going to buy the long one? I mean, percentage-wise?
There's a slight skew towards more families. So with children in the household, over half of the people that have long wheelbase have children in the household. Less than half do for the short wheelbase. So there's a slight skew there. It's a slightly younger customer that has the long wheelbase.
Really?
So, because it's not as broad, right? So you have some empty nesters that are in the shorter wheelbase version that kind of skew that average a little longer.
Real good. Look, we're going to have to wrap this segment up. Craig Patterson, thanks so much for coming on. Coming up next, we're going to be talking more about the vehicle itself. But first, we've got to take a short break and get a message from our friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back talking all about the Ford Expedition, only now we've got the chief engineer, Todd Havener, and it's great to have you on the show,
Todd. Thank you. Nice to be here.
So, pretty decent vehicle. Gary and I took it out for a drive, and this thing rides
pretty decent is all you say, John.
Well, otherwise, everyone's going to think I'm sucking up to you.
No, I know. That's right.
So, clean sheet, you guys had a big opportunity here.
Fantastic opportunity. I mean, it's been 20 years since we did an all-new one.
Is that right? 20 years?
Well, all new. I mean, there's been fresh ones along the way, but to have a clean sheet for the most part, I mean, coming from the pickup platform and then putting the all-aluminum body on it, and then it was fantastic, at least for me, because then I could, you know, influence the
system. Well, okay, so you mentioned the pickup platform. So this is a body-on-frame vehicle, and so is the frame exactly the same frame that's underlying an F-150, or did you guys modify it?
It's a new frame because, one, we don't have a pickup box on the end.
Right.
And the front structure is roughly the same. So the front stub of the frame. Think of the frame in three sections. You have the front, the middle, and the rear. The middle is different because we have different wheelbase, and the rear is different because we have an independent rear suspension.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Craig had mentioned, too, that you've got the two different wheelbases on it, and did that pose any issues for you? I mean, it requires different sheet metal and everything, not just a longer frame.
Well, it didn't pose it. We knew going in we were going to do that just because we knew there was a market for both short and long wheelbase. It obviously takes challenges from an engineering standpoint because you got to go and develop the both. But, no, I mean, we would develop one, and then we do variants off the other one, so...
And you went with a independent rear suspension.
Yeah.
Was that the idea from the get-go?
Absolutely. I mean, we had it in the prior model, and we knew the benefits it gave us, not only from ride and handling, but then also for the third row and getting a good package back there.
Mm-hmm. So presumably you guys looked at the rear end of the car perhaps as much as some people would look at the front end of a car. I mean, not only in terms of getting people in back into the third row, but I mean the way you have the seats folding so you can put cargo back there and so on. Was that
absolutely. I mean, if there's any vehicle in the utility segment, this is the one that gets most third row use. And so getting into second and third row was pantomime. Not only perception of space and how you get in and out, but then the third row and then second row seats. Mm-hmm. We can't have fixed seats anymore. We needed sliding seats so that it could be more people adaptable as well as in cargo. Mm-hmm.
You got that new 10-speed automatic transmission, too. That's got to be something that really makes a difference in the drivability of this vehicle.
You know, if there's one thing, you know, sometimes you go through these programs and you're dealing with powertrain, but the 10-speed was fantastic from the start. I mean, we tuned it all the way up through, but not only from the efficiency we get with 10-speed and the shifts through normal driving, but then on trailer tow, it just really helps with that when it's trying to hunt and peck for what gear it wants to be to if you're on going uphill or downhill. Mm-hmm.
And you've got a manual button, too, where you can dial in whatever gear you want.
Sure.
Is that mainly for towing, or is that for driving in snow and ice and that as well?
Yeah, you know, there's obviously still a want by some people to do a manual selection just to be more in control. We tend to think sometimes you want to do it when you're towing so you get a little bit more engine braking. But frankly, now with the tow haul mode that we have, it takes care of it for you. But again,
so you have it there just in case
we have
it
there in case there's someone who does want to have a little bit of control. I use it myself because I like to play around, but then it just driving the mountains typically, though most people will be on tow haul and it'll be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And you've got the same powertrain but different power ratings out of it. Go into a little detail on that.
Well, we wanted to make Platinum stand out a little bit more, not only from the styling standpoint but also from the performance. So we amped up the engine to 400 horsepower and 480 pound-feet of torque.
And this is all through calibration.
Calibration.
Software, I mean, there's no other hardware.
That's right. It's calibration base, and but the base is 375 and 470 pound-feet. It's the most powerful Expedition we've ever had.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of gone right by the aluminum body on this. So that's all new for you guys as well, right?
Well, obviously the pickups did it.
Right.
It's our first aluminum full-size utility, which is an engineering challenge because of torsional rigidity and what we needed to do from a quietness standpoint and so forth. But the aluminum helps because all the weight savings we took, because we don't claim all the weight savings because we reinvested it into a bunch of other features that we haven't even talked about yet. But up to 300 pounds savings versus the outgoing, power to weight's improved, durability, the loads on the suspension are lesser. Mm-hmm. It was a good win-win for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are some of those things we haven't talked about yet that you've added into the vehicle?
Like the panoramic moonroof. The sliding second row seats, those add weight. The independent rear suspension and what we did there. Some of the features relative to the IP and console with some of the electronic features that added weight with different modules that come into play.
Gotcha. And also, Craig had mentioned keeping this thing fresh down the road, and after several years in the market, that there will be variations coming out. So we've got a question from one of our viewers, Mac Murphy. He wants to know if the Expedition is going to get the Raptor 3.5 EcoBoost in a performance version.
Well, I obviously can't comment on future product cycle plans.
Mac, good question.
Yeah, it's a good question.
When they tell you they can't answer, that's a great question.
I can tell you for the 18 model year when it comes out, it will not have the Raptor engine. So if that's what Mac was wondering, yeah, then I've answered that one.
So during the development program, what was the biggest challenge that you guys had to solve?
You know, probably the biggest was the never-ending work that we do with Studio and making sure that, especially a utility vehicle like this, we get the function along with what styling needs to make sure it attracts people in. So just like the roof rail, I use that. A lot of our competitors, they have a flush-mounted roof rail because it's a good aesthetic that the styling folks want. I needed function. I always use a Christmas tree and tying it down in the winter, and I need to just put a simple rope in through the rail because I may not have crossbars or whatever else with me at the time. And so I wanted an air gap between the bottom of the rail and the roof.
Right.
They wanted an aesthetic look where it was flush. And so I got them, and we agreed that we would make it flush-like. So what I did, instead of having the roof and the rail and then seeing a gap, I embedded the rail in amongst the roof beads. So it's kind of a nested or snake.
Mm-hmm. So you still have the gap, but you don't really
still
see
have the
it
gap. But from the outside, it looks flush-like.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a win-win. But I think that tension through the development of the program is necessary and good because we push each other to excel.
Mm-hmm.
But it also turns out to be the most difficult part because you do have to work through and try to get what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. Hey, going back to that transmission a minute, is this the joint GM-Ford design
yes.
transmission?
Yep.
How did that work out? Were you involved in that or no?
No,
okay.
No. I'm just happy to have ours out first.
Okay.
So this has the flip-up backlight.
Yeah.
Was that a tough thing to execute?
You know, everything is kind of on the table when you're doing a new one, and so the flip glass didn't last long on the table. We wanted to keep it primarily because of the usage. So if you're towing a boat, it's hard to get the liftgate open. And so the flip glass becomes more of a need for this segment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why then you got a cargo floor, and that's why we put in the cargo management system so you actually can build up a shelf. We wanted to utilize the vertical space of the cube back there versus just having one big open box.
Mm-hmm. So from an engineering point of view, I mean, how much was predicated on towing, whether it's boats or horse trailers or whatnot? I mean, was that a big consideration throughout?
Yeah, I mean, we were best in class already, and I wanted to go even further just because I could, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So we were at 9,200 pounds on the out one. I wanted to go up another 100 pounds and get to 93.
Gary and I went driving around in a Platinum Max with 22-inch mm-hmm. wheels. I love the look of 22s. Usually the ride isn't so great. This is pretty damn good. What did you guys really concentrate on to get? I mean, well, one thing, as Gary pointed out, you got a huge wheelbase, so that's yep. got to help a lot too. But still, going over rough pavement and the like, this thing's pretty well behaved. The wheels are.
Yeah, well, this has the CCD, the continuously controlled damping, so that helps. That gives us a win-win between handling and ride. Of course, we work a lot with the tire manufacturers, and then the isolation. So it's a marshmallow on a stick. If you got a marshmallow on a stick, if the marshmallow is heavy and you got a flimsy stick, the marshmallow is going to get a lot of flex. What we did is we lightened up the marshmallow, which is the top hat, aluminum.
Hmm.
We have a very stiff underbody with the frame. It's a stick. And so consequently, the body roll and the roll control and consequently the primary and secondary ride just came along for the ride as we just worked on the isolation of it with you know, our dampers and springs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so that gets you the isolation from an NVH standpoint. What about from wind noise, road noise, and all that? Because it's pretty quiet.
Yeah, well, we wanted to make sure, because we do a lot of competitive benchmarking, we wanted to make sure that that wasn't an excuse or became a reason because with three rows of people, to be able to have a conversation was tantamount. So that's the articulation index that we work for. Mm-hmm. And so with the aluminum and putting in air leakage targets and how we use structural adhesives as well as mastics and then the sound pack in general, all went into making this the quietest one out there.
Do you have noise cancellation technology?
We have active noise cancellation on the Platinum series. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And another thing we noticed is that when we were going through curves, I mean, again, giant vehicle, and you know, sometimes they have a tendency to wallow. Mm-hmm. There's very little, if any, wallowing. What does that go back to?
That was the roll control. Okay. I mean, we've all experienced, especially if you sit in the second row or third row, and I've watched it whenever I'm doing drives. We always like to keep people in second, third row. Or I'm a user. I've used Expeditions for years. And as I make a turn, I see people's heads move back and forth. So we wanted to make sure that the roll control, and that's where CCD comes in. Mm-hmm. And again, getting that balance between the top hat and the platform, and then really working on the isolation. So the good work by the body and chassis team, so then we could let the vehicle dynamics guys get to work on isolation.
Mm-hmm. One of the trends we've seen, too, is all this detailed aerodynamic work that's going into cars these days. Anything that you really had to sweat the details on this one?
Well, we clearly set a target to be best in class in fuel economy, and aero had to come. And you think of a vehicle this big with aerodynamics, we improved by over 15% versus the outgoing. Based on our internal numbers, we have best-in-class coefficient of drag numbers. So we sweated a lot of details, not only with the active grille shutters, mm-hmm. But then just, of course, working with the studio on plan view shape and getting the balance between the rear spoiler and the front air dams and so forth. So and then, you know, frankly, we took a hit on one element of aero, and that was the size of our mirrors, because they contribute to the frontal opening. Mm-hmm. But this size of vehicle needs a good mirror. And we knew a competitor of ours actually launched with a smaller mirror, and it wasn't met very well. Mm-hmm. But with our standards and what we did, we accommodated that and got the good aerodynamics and the fuel efficiency we were looking for.
We see on a lot of cars these days a lot of stuff underneath the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Did you do anything with that?
We have some shielding. We didn't need full body shields, but mm-hmm. we did do some shielding. And that goes for both aero as well as we did some skid plating like on our FX4 and then obviously some sound package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting talking about visibility in the vehicle, the button that you can make the headrests in the third row go down. That's when no one's back there.
Well, I got to tell you, that was a tough one to sell, not only with the seat engineering team and then obviously trying to get money from the marketing team to try to help me make it work. But, you know, that was an unmet need because it happened to me many times. You'd take the kids because you were the driver because you had the biggest vehicle in the sub. They would get out of the third row. All the kids, they don't care. They leave the headrests up, and then you got some blocked vision. And so my mind works in understanding that. And so we put forth an effort to do that. But it does another thing, too. When you fold the third row flat from the back, in the old days, you had to dump the headrest manually.
Right, right.
Now they automatically fold as well. So I really got two good things out of that. That's right.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree with you. It's such a pain in the neck when you got to get out of the vehicle. And in a lot of vehicles, you got to pull the stupid headrest out of the seat.
Well,
and then where do you throw it? You throw it on the floor or something.
Right, right.
Just a bad solution. So I like what you did.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was money well spent.
Mm-hmm. I hope the senior leaders of Ford are hearing that.
We'll make sure that they do. What else? What else are we missing? What do you think that you should bring out here?
Another one, unmet need, was the child seat stays in the second row. You know, we have the tip slide. I mean,
right.
I wanted sliding second row seats to give that versatility for the occupants. And then you see mothers and fathers who have kids. If you want to get somebody in third row, you got to take that child seat out. Why? Leave it in.
You're a pain in the neck to move.
And since the seat could slide, we could do that. Mm-hmm. And then what happens when you open up lift gates? Things fall out. We wanted to solve that problem.
Back.
Well, it wasn't just a little lip. That was part of it. It's flat low floor. It's that rear scuff.
Right.
As well as the relationship to the liftgate trim. And we, we did our own science project and we sorted it out, and we think we got it solved.
It's funny, here we've been talking about, you know, all new design, you know, stiff chassis, aluminum this, 10 speed that, horsepower this, and comes down to little things like lips at the back and, you know, fold down headrest that people go nuts over.
Hey, those are the unmet needs, right? These are things that people just have accepted because it's just the way it's been. And, you know, through our research, ethnographic, and of course, our own experience with the product. I mean, I've been doing utilities for 15 years straight now. And so, and that's the good thing about my job with a clean sheet of paper. You can kind of influence some of the decisions and get some content in.
So you've been doing this for 15 years. Now, when you were starting 15 years ago, did you ever imagine that you'd have a Platinum Max version that would be so well equipped, so decked out with all of this technology?
Yes, I did.
Man, Kresgen.
The man's a visionary.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was hopeful.
Todd, we're going to have to wrap this up, but thanks so much for coming on. Very interesting, and I know we only just scratched the surface of everything that you've done there, but great to have you on the show.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Real good. We're going to take another break right now, give a shout-out to our friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexis offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
We're back, except we're no longer talking about the expedition because we've got Stephanie Brinley from IHS Market and Henry Payne from the Detroit News joining us. But before we even get going talking to them, it's time for Dr. Data.
All right. So now, even though we're in this space and surrounded by Ford vehicles, we haven't mentioned we're in Malibu, California right now. I think that's important to know.
In Chevy Malibu?
So the number we have is... is 227,881.
220.
Yeah, I can hold this up. You can see this.
227,881.
All right. So what is this?
The number,
number
of Accords sold last year. It's the number of people in Malibu.
Maybe it's the number of people
of Accords sold last year.
That's not the Accords. Yeah. Accords is too low. Accords too low.
Number of people in Malibu, California.
Number of Malibus sold last year.
Henry gets it.
All right, Henry!
Because we're in Malibu.
Just going down the laundry list.
Purely because we're here. And you said we weren't going to talk about the expedition anymore.
We got to get their opinion.
Yeah, we got to find out.
Exactly.
All right, so since you had the answer, we'll start with Stephanie.
Yeah.
Ladies first.
Yeah.
I'm the lady.
Okay, what's your reaction? Just first initial reaction.
I mean, because it was, what, a 45-minute drive this afternoon. It does everything that I expected it to do. And what this does is bring Expedition forward into the current design, in turn current design, but current technology idiom, and makes it really competitive with what's out there. This isn't the segment to break new ground. This isn't the place where you do self-driving Super Cruise type stuff. This is where you've got a relatively small percentage of the market, but you have people who really want specific things out of their vehicles, and this Expedition is going to be able to do that better than any Expedition before.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Henry, what do you think about it?
I think these vehicles are just extraordinary. I mean, they're rolling condos.
Yeah.
I mean, you could live in them. In fact, a buddy of mine that I race with does live in them. Every race weekend we go on. Dan Tinley, hey Dan, if you're watching, Dan Tinley rents an Expedition and drives it to the track and unpacks his luggage in the back and sleeps in it. And, you know, you add a moonroof,
right,
which is new with this generation, and you can stare at the stars now while you sleep in this thing. I mean, I'm asking, where's the fridge? And you go to the Navigator, which is the cream at the top of this cake. And its interior is more beautiful than my house. I mean, these are just incredible things that have every creature comfort you can think of.
So what did you think about its ride and handling? Because you're a racing guy and you like to drive.
I did squall the tires a little bit. And I kept it on the road, and I think that's pretty impressive for a 6,000-pound rolling condo.
Uh-huh.
Here's what I don't get, because, Steph, you made the point. I mean, Ford has let GM kick its teeth in this segment for years. Mm-hmm. I can't believe they let them get away with it for so long. Ford does such a fantastic job on the pickup side, but GM absolutely kicks their butt on the SUV side. And why it took Ford so long to do a vehicle like this is a big puzzle to me.
You know, it still takes energy, and Ford just saw this segment. I'm expecting the decline in this segment, because while it's still a profitable segment, it's not as big as it used to be in the good old days or bad old days or however you want to define them.
But you can make a ton of money at it,
and GM is like, okay, fine, I'll take those checks. It's all good. And there are, I think it's really important to remember that there are still people like Henry's friend that have a specific use set that this vehicle is perfect for. Mm-hmm. And being able to address that in this space, I think that Ford's going to be able to make a little bit of inroad on this. GM has the segment so locked up, it'll be really tough to move the needle by much, but still, they can move it some, and the more important thing, it's profits.
Do they have it locked up because they've been refreshing their vehicles on a...
That's most of it, but it's still, you've got to get people to think about it a little bit differently. And this is a segment, too, that's highly loyal. So you've got to get the Chevrolet
buyer. I think this vehicle can do it.
And what it does, it brings it forward. So if you're an Expedition owner that has just been kind of going through Expeditions or whatever, you get into this one, and it's heads and shoulders. It's stuff that you didn't even realize that cars could do. You'll pay for it, by the way.
Yeah.
But it is stuff you didn't know cars could do.
But if you are in the Ford family, too, I think this really fits into the family. I mean, it looks like a big Ford Explorer with the independent rear on it, which the prior generation had. But it does handle nice. I mean, it doesn't have bed flutter like an F-150. So, you know, somebody who likes F-150s but needs an enclosed rear and wants a little better handling, it fits that bill. So I think it's a nice member of the family, and there are a lot of members of the Ford family out there.
Without a doubt. And one thing that's true is it's definitely an American segment. And not the only ones playing, but certainly the only ones making any notable difference so far.
Yeah, we're trying to think about, you know, Land Cruiser maybe?
Armada? It's Toyota, Sequoia. Nissan Armada. And those, neither of those quite fit the bill as perfectly. Mm-hmm. Well, who understands how to be comfortable towing better than Americans do?
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing, Steph, is I love the Chrysler Pacifica mm-hmm. minivan. Just an extraordinary three-row vehicle. But there's a minivan stigma out there. It continues. But if you like that three-row, I'm a 6'5 guy. I can travel very comfortably in the third row of this vehicle, just like I can in the back of Pacifica. And again, with the moonroof, so that you're not in a hole back there. You have light. For the minivan averse, this is more expensive, but this is that kind of vehicle that you can go anywhere on hunting trips, take the mm-hmm. family anywhere, and doesn't come with the minivan stigma. So, you know, it fills a lot of boxes.
It does. The go-not-go trigger seems to be the towing.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's going to choose this typically has to tow something more.
Right, right.
And they may only tow
like
it once or twice
car.
A year.
Yeah.
Like a race car.
Yeah. Nobody can
or
hands will tow most
and then
race
they can,
cars.
And then they can live in it.
And then that tends to be sort of the trigger for this. Mm-hmm. And minivan stigma seems to be slowing a little bit, but it's still there. Minivans are just even better suited to families, I think.
Yeah, more affordable. Yeah, it's a better price point. But, yeah, what a vehicle. I mean, again, the electronics that are coming into these generations of car are just extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this car has USBs and all rows, has Apple CarPlay, and all the digital hookups that the whole family needs. And to your point
digital
about...
Digital hookups? Isn't that something else?
Well, no, I've been out.
That's
of,
a different cast.
Yeah. After all,
I've been out of play for a while, so I don't know about digital.
I think we all have been.
But for the millennials coming in, and I think millennials got a slow start for a lot of reasons. Part of it, very deep recession. But they're going to be coming in with those families, and those families have digital electronic devices out the wazoo, and these vehicles fit that.
They do. I mean, you not only have your USBs in every row, which I think is something that not all automakers yet have realized how important it is to have a USB, a PowerPoint, wherever you are, but the Wi-Fi connects up to 10 devices, which is a pretty good number for that space.
Right. So, Stace, you're the analyst here. You look at all this stuff. Where's the full-size SUV segment going? You mentioned it's growing a little bit. Is that about
it?
It's not growing.
No, it's not. It's sort of where it lives. We'll see some ups and downs given economy and given just sort of market trends, but it's pretty stable. And I think it's one of those segments, kind of like minivans are pretty stable as well. Again, it's the vehicle that does exactly what this owner wants and needs it to do. There is not a good alternative. If you have a three-row vehicle and you just need to haul eight people and you go to a minivan but you have a boat, you don't need to be able to do that. There's just certain things that it's perfect for. And so we're looking at it just being stable at this point. So you don't see growth, but you do see profits.
Well, I was just going to say, you don't see growth in the number of units sold, but the money made off these things is growing.
It's pretty comparatively in terms of, you know, building a whole new thing from scratch. This is really taking the truck and saying, all right, we'll tweak here and there. We'll play with the structure. We'll play mostly with the exterior. And you know, it's a fraction of the cost of a brand new vehicle development, and people pay for it.
Yeah,
Jeep is coming out with the Grand Wagoneer. Right. Is that going to play in this segment, or is that a little bit
smaller? I think it's
going
to be a little bit smaller, but I think it's close.
Okay,
it's close to the. That's
an excellent point. I mean, the Jeep has discovered this segment as well. I mean, go back to 2003. Read news stories in 2003. I mean, the moral condemnation
of SUVs,
this segment in particular. And there were gas guzzlers, and the whole world was going hybrid. And here we are, 15
right.
years later, hybrids are below 3% of the market.
And they're you didn't hear the word SUV without gas guzzling.
Right. And here
and
we are with 20 mile per gallon giants, and people still love them.
The fuel economy has come up to get strong enough that people can accept it, and we're in a space where it's okay. And it supports the fact that people never really stopped wanting it.
Okay, but what happens, let's take this out 4 or 5 years, aren't these going to have to get electrified as well? Will the customer who buys this go for a hybrid Expedition Platinum Max?
If it does what it needs to do, if it tows like it needs to do, if you meet the product specifications that you need, if you can put it in your life and it does what your life needs, I don't think the hang-up will be electrification.
Well, as an electric cynic, you're going to see more and more 48-volt systems come in, and God knows, I mean, when you bring the refrigerator into this vehicle in the next generation, you might need the 48-volt solution battery, and that'll both satisfy EV mandates and also power the fridge.
But just think, when you're going down a hill and you've got all that energy that you're collecting into the battery, it'll be like a perfect opportunity.
Even more brake resistance.
More torque. Because you're saying it's a massive thing.
And more torque. Get those towing figures over 10,000.
What do you mean you're an EV cynic? You're the only one at the table who's ordered a Tesla Model 3.
That's right, and I want to go track it. So, yeah. I like EVs. I don't like EV mandates, but I like EVs.
Yeah.
So here's a fun fact about the Expedition. So you mentioned 2003. So this vehicle came out for the first time model year 97. Mm-hmm. So in 2003, they started reworking on it. I mean, it was not a full model change. So who was the chief program engineer on that car?
Oh. 2003 Expedition?
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't say.
Oh, you're going to surprise us with this one, Gary. I know you are. Gosh, who would he say? I don't know. Who?
John Krafcek.
Oh, wow.
That's a good name.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? John continues to understand what consumers want.
Mm-hmm.
Now running Waymo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So could be some big changes.
This could be a good ride-sharing vehicle.
Yeah. Now, you asked... You know, Todd, if he had gone back years ago, if he would have ever imagined this, I'll bet if you had asked John Krafcek in 2003 if he thought he'd be running some autonomous tech company out of the valley, he would have thought, nah.
Yeah, and running it with Chrysler minivans. So, bring the conversation full circle. Why not bring in some autonomous expeditions?
Well, he did say that one of the reasons they really like the using the Pacifica, one of your favorite vehicles,
yeah, I love it.
Is the sliding door.
Yeah.
Okay, because they're saying, okay, if you're going to use this to pick up people, door opens,
easier
they can
access.
Get in versus having to pull the door. Although, on this car, now you mentioned that one of the places you really like the aluminum was opening the door.
Yeah. If you open the doors on this vehicle, they feel very light. I don't mean feather light, like the wind's going to snap them away from them. Not flimsy at all, because usually on these big SUVs, man, it's like a bank vault opening and closing the doors. That's the first place I really noticed the aluminum.
Yeah, it's aluminum. Well, and it's also interesting, too, how these technologies, I mean, they lightweight these vehicles, right? The F-150s saved up to 600, 700 pounds. Mm-hmm. These guys look at the weight savings and say, oh, that means we can put more stuff in it. and I think electrification goes that way, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think truck guys and performance guys like me look at batteries and say, hey, that's more torque. You know, and so there's much bigger envelopes in these technologies than just being green.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's come back to Tesla then, because there's been this bill introduced, or I guess in the House, Republicans have said, get rid of the tax credit for EVs.
Good riddance.
Is it going to happen, though?
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to go away. I mean, this is tax simplification. They're closing loopholes, and it's a very coastal credit.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are Californian rich, for the most part, Californians and New Yorkers who vote Democrat, that are not going to get their $7,500 tax credit.
Okay, but what about the people that Chevy wants to sell a whole bunch of Bolts to?
So Chevy is going to run out of its credits in the first of next year because they sell a lot of vehicles. So it's a moot point for them.
Right.
They were going to run into the ceiling anyway. I mean, every manufacturer hits a ceiling of 200,000 credits. Toyota hit theirs back when we had a hybrid credit a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Tesla's going to hit theirs.
Tesla's going to hit theirs very soon. So
it was meant to be a temporary thing, which is what the ceiling was for.
Right.
The EVs do need to trip a point where people want them for the sake of them being EVs and are willing to spend the money on them. Now, the Chevrolet Bolt is an interesting one because, you know, it's still, even without the credit, you're $36,000 to $45,000, which is a fair chunk of change, but it's within somewhat normalcy of what people are paying for vehicles. A little bit smaller than most people are spending on a $40,000 car, but you're trading off the technology. At some point, that industry has to support itself without incentives.
Yep.
But my question is, okay, so the House Republicans have put this into the tax overhaul bill, get rid of the EV credit. Is it really going to happen?
It's not done yet. I don't follow politics well enough to be able to make a really good prediction, but there's a series of steps. So the Ways and Means group has said, this is what we want to do. The House needs to vote on it. The Senate is going to put their own bill forward. The Senate's going to vote on it. And then there's going to be this lot of grumbling back and forth until you finally have a tax plan.
Yeah.
Will it be the one that does stick? It depends on what the political will is.
It's
done.
It's cooked.
It could be
over.
Yeah, it's six
over.
Feet
just,
under.
Just
yeah, because the
sell your
I mean, the
electric.
Yeah, I mean the headline on this tax bill is tax simplification.
Yes.
So the struggles are going to be over the big items like home mortgage deductions and state tax deductions. All the little stuff that doesn't have big constituencies, and there's not a big constituency for a $7,500 tax break. They're done.
You're not going to
He's absolutely right about that point.
I didn't count it.
It's a small one that most people, that is not necessarily, it may very well be one of those that you're like, oh, whatever. This is not where we choose to pick our battles.
So what's this do to EV sales, especially the Tesla Model 3 and the Chevy Bolt?
Well, Model 3 has enough. As we talked about, we knew they were going to hit the credit.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to hit the limit. Henry knew he was going to hit the limit and probably isn't going to get
his tax. Are you going to drop your order if you can't get your $7,500?
No, I never baked it in. And again, frankly,
he's a conservative. He doesn't believe in this stuff.
Yeah, I'm a small government guy. I don't think the government ought to be telling you what product to buy. I mean, if you got a product that makes it in the market, put it out there and make it go. I mean, iPhones transformed the cell phone market. without any subsidy. I mean, they put it out there. It sold in volume. And guess what? Infrastructure followed it. Mm-hmm. You have cell towers everywhere in this country. Tesla puts out a brilliant product. I think people will buy it, whether it's got a $7,500 tax credit on or not. And if Chevy and Ford can figure out how to sell in volume, electric infrastructure will follow it. So
Nissan Leaf. I mean, there's right. several. And
keep
that's
keep
it.
The
there's so
out.
Many more coming. Yeah, I agree. Keep the subsidies out is long-term certainly what we need. And I also do, I share Henry's cynicism that this is probably not going to be the thing that the politicians are going to put up a lot of fight over on either side of the mm-hmm. aisle.
Is it going to hurt EV sales?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Short-term, for sure, it will. But it'll hurt the new ones coming out. I'm not sure how much it's going to hurt Tesla simply because we don't really know when those cars are going to be delivered. That's one. Yeah. Another is that...
Mine's just delivered a month. Or just delayed a month.
Delayed a month.
Just a month.
Another is I think...
If
that
you believe that, I don't think you're going to see your car next year at all.
But again, that, to me, that's the test, is that $7,500 tax break or not, I want to buy a Tesla Model 3. Mm-hmm. I'm a guy who looks at... who in that segment looks at BMW M3s, looks at Porsche Caymans. I want a Tesla Model 3. It is that different. Mm-hmm. It is that unique a product that I will buy
will
it
you
for
wait?
What it is.
How long will you wait?
I have
year?
No idea.
Will you wait another year?
I have no idea.
His friend lives in a car, so I mean...
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
These guys are hardcore, right?
But again, you know, most, I would think that a good chunk of the number of people who put down reservations for Tesla were aware they were not going to be eligible for the credit.
But you know what's interesting is if we look at what's going on in Europe in terms of congestion charges, in terms of increasing number of municipalities saying, you know what, unless you have an electric vehicle, you're not driving in the center city. And so, in effect, what they are doing is subsidizing mm-hmm. the demand for electric vehicles. And, you know, if you look at, so you're mentioning the Leaf, and so it's, you know, it's Renault-Nissan, and so Renault has a fleet of electric vehicles that are being made available in Europe. And you know, Renault's doing very well, comparatively speaking, in terms of the number of EVs that it's selling, and I think a large part of that is predicated on, you know, lots of sales in France, and Paris is one of the first, you know, municipalities to come out strongly in support of electrification. So... is there not a risk that the United States falls behind other parts of the world? And this is to say nothing of what's going on in China, and they're trying to, you know, kickstart. And Henry says no.
No, and look at the diesel example. 20 years ago, Europe said, diesel is the future, and we are going to incentivize everybody to buy a diesel. And the United States said, you know, we'll sit back here and do our cheap gas thing. Here we are 20 years later. Europe hates diesels. Now
why do they hate diesels?
Why do they hate diesels?
Because they're fickle political animals. And so now...
that's the answer.
Now, 20 years later, now they want to incentivize electrics. Fine. I mean, I think markets like the United States are better off letting consumers figure these things out rather than political trends.
I think that's true. I think that we also are just in a completely different environment, and we're much more resistant to allowing that to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, it does happen. We did have an incentive to begin with. We do still have to deal with California and the states that follow California, and that ZEV mandate is an issue. It's an issue for auto manufacturers, and they have to figure out how to get over that. So if you're...
So explain what that means. So I'm an auto manufacturer, and there's the ZEV mandate.
The ZEV mandate says that if you're the top six, you have to sell a certain percentage of vehicles that are...
And the top six mean the six largest automakers.
Automakers in terms of sales, based on California, basically. Because California has a waiver to be able to set its own emissions requirements.
Right.
Certain states, all states, have the ability to choose to follow California or follow federal,
right?
But they can't make up their own. Only California gets to make up its own.
Right.
And one of that says that you have to have a certain percentage. The percentage is much higher, as maybe 22% for the top six. And by 2025,
so the top six would be GM, Ford
Toyota,
Honda,
Nissan. GM, Ford, FCA
is FCA.
Toyota, Honda, yeah. Nissan.
And then the others have a lower threshold to meet, but they all have a threshold to meet.
So you have to have an electric vehicle or a hydrogen-powered vehicle or...
credits from someplace else.
Yes, yes.
You can buy your way out of the problem. It's every bit as bad as the IRS in terms of like the number of little, I'm not going to use the word loopholes,
though, right,
but in the number of ways that you can figure out how to meet that credit. But it still exists. You have to play the game because you put them all together and it's at least 30% of the U.S. market.
But it's
and
a game.
And you can't simply go, oh, I'm
but,
not going to play.
But it's a game. And
it
that's
is
the
game.
Thing. I mean, this is all being done at a government government company level. So the bar moves all the time, depending on how much lobbying money is put in there, because ultimately these markets depend on consumers.
So that's the trick. You've got to figure out how to meet both. Mm-hmm. And there is an issue coming forward because these aren't coming together very well. As much as you want to buy the Tesla, it's still a small percentage of the market. It will increase. And one of the reasons that it will increase is because automakers are, both because of U.S. developments and because of China and because of Europe and because of confluence of other things and technology making it possible, mm-hmm. are spending more money on developing electrified vehicles. And the more that we have, the more acceptance we're going to have. It's still going to be way slower, I think, than the governments involved would like it to be. But it will happen
better than it has. Yeah, I mean, the consumer is just such a powerful thing. And to go back to our expedition discussion and how these vehicles continue to excel, they continue to get better in every way. And for all that Europe has done, I mean, you have green parties much more powerful in Europe than here. And yet, what country produced the premier electric car maker in the world? The United States. Mm-hmm. Because Tesla had to compete in a market here. They had to compete against the very best in a wide open market.
And they had to find a way that was unique from someone
else.
That's right. And that's one thing that
they
absolutely have done.
Wasn't the government mandate that did it. Yeah, they had to compete.
Yeah. And
well, very interesting discussion. It's going to be fascinating to see how that develops because you're right, Stephanie, that you know, California's got the mandate. I want to say that green cars, including plug-ins and hybrids, are maybe 4.5% of sales in California.
Yeah.
And about 3.5% for the rest of the country. So even California's got a long way to go to make this mandate stick.
They do.
It's going to be fascinating to see how this develops.
Everyone wants your brother. You know, when it comes to the mandate, everybody wants the neighbor to have it.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, let's wrap the show up. Sure. Want to thank you both for coming on, though. You know, Stephanie Brindley, Henry Payne, great
Thanks,
having
guys.
Both of
it's
you.
It's fun.
Thanks for having us.
Good show. Thank you.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.